What's good, everybody? Welcome to Origin Story, the podcast that interviews creators about where they came from to understand how they got here. My name's Philip Russell, and I'm with my co-host,
Ben Thorpe.
And Ben, today is a really cool conversation. We talked to Abi, who is the designer and programmer of an upcoming game called Venba, which is a narrative cooking game where you play as an Indian immigrant mom who immigrates to Canada with her family in the 1980s. And players are cooking various dishes to restore this lost recipe cookbook. And there's like branching conversations, and you explore this story around family, love, and loss. And you know, this is one of those games that, again, it's not out yet, but I've been seeing it on Twitter for like a year now, and I've been so excited for it. So it was really interesting to kind of just hear a little bit about, you know, how it came to be and just more about Abi himself. So
right. And I feel like, Phil, you should, the like part of the tee up here is, I think the interest is, this is a game that is very much about food and about like what food is and what food does, the way that food is, you know, about more than food and about more than, you know, food, but it's also about connections and relationships. And you, I would say both of us, but you definitely more than me, we're food heads. We love food. We talk about food all the time. Every day I'm posting pictures of the lunch that I'm having into the chat, and we're talking about like, here's what I'm eating. Here's what I'm cooking up. Oh, wow. Thinking about this new recipe. Like, here's what we're doing. I feel like food is a big part of our lives. And so I think that in a lot of ways is like why this was on our radar as, oh, look, a video game that's also thinking about food and how it's more complex than just like what you're throwing into a dish. It was perfect for us.
For sure. I mean, I think, Ben, isn't it like Poke Wednesday or something like that you post in the chat?
It's Poke Thursdays now. But yes, every week I go and I get a bowl of poke from the Poke Hibachi place that's up the street.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think all that really rings true. You know, Sporkful, for instance, is like one of my favorite podcasts. I'm always looking at cooking videos online. So it was really cool to talk to Abi, who it turns out is also really interested in cooking, in addition to game design and stuff like that. And, you know, like you were saying, one of the things that's always interested me about cooking and food in general is, obviously, food tastes good and all that, but I really like that kind of cultural connection and how it relates to one's identity and their background. You know, we all have specific memories and emotions associated with the different things that we eat, both good and bad. So I think in that way, this conversation is so much about that. In addition to learning about what Venba will play like, Abi is really interested in how food connects people together, even during times of stress and disagreement. And I think that that was a really interesting perspective to hear about, especially in games where, you know, so many cooking games are based around kind of like competition or like stress. It was a much different approach.
Right. I mean, I think this is a line that we kind of, it was in a separate interview, he mentions this, that like everybody, no matter if you're fighting, no matter what kind of the conflict is, you all have to come back to the dinner table at some point. And so thinking about like meals is a thing that you share, that like no matter what the conflict is, there's some kind of a resolution there. Yeah, so I just, a really great conversation, and I'm going to needle you one more time. Also, Phil's gently underselling his relationship to food a little bit. I will get videos sometimes. It'll be like, I swear to God, it's like 1 a.m. your time. I'll like open Instagram up, and you've sent me this video of someone making this like really just decadent dish. And I just know, I'm like, Phil has been scrolling through food videos for hours to get to this.
Yeah, like since the pandemic, I feel like, you know, my partner and I, we got a Dutch oven, and now it's all about like super long cook time, French cooking, braised meats and all that. So yeah, it's like definitely leveled up since having to, you know, stay at home more. And it turns out Abi also is interested in that. So basically we're kindred spirits. But yeah, don't want to belabor it too much, but really fun conversation. If you all enjoy the conversation, definitely tell a friend, tweet about it, or, you know, tell your mom, whatever. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts and, you know, subscribe, follow us on Spotify. All that stuff really helps in terms of getting more people listening to the show. And I think we're really interested right now in, like, who else you'd want to hear on Origin Story. So yeah, with that in mind, let's jump right into the episode. Today, we're talking to Abi, who is the designer and programmer of a new game called Venba by Vasai Studios. Abi, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, you know, how are you doing today? What, you know, you just came back, I think, from the Tribeca Festival showing off the game. How was that?
Yeah, that was very surreal for us. I see the... you know, articles, or sometimes on Twitter, I just see people talking about Venba, and to me, it's very surreal that this game that I've been making with people from out of my bedroom is reaching this level of success that we didn't expect. So yeah, we are very grateful for opportunities like Tribeca for sure.
That's great. No, it's funny. Like on Twitter, I feel like I saw like screenshots of Venba like a year or two ago, and I immediately was like, "Damn, I need to know what this game is all about." One, because like I just am a huge lover of food and cooking, and I saw the gameplay screenshots, and I was like, "I need to know what this is." And maybe to kind of backpedal just a second, could you just tell us a little bit about what Venba is as a game and whatnot?
Sure. So Venba is a narrative cooking game where you play as the titular character called Venba. She moves from India to Canada around in the late 1980s, and she decides to start a family here. And the game is just about, you know, every level you cook a certain dish, and every level the family is at a different point of time in their lives. So we sort of use cooking as a lens to examine, okay, where's the family at now? What are they doing? What are their challenges? How are they growing and changing? So, you know, you have one half that's all narrative, you have dialogue choices, and the other half you have, you get to cook and solve these puzzles. Because the idea is that, you know, when she comes from India to Canada, her recipe book, it gets damaged on the flight. So the recipes are like incomplete, and you have like little hints, and you use that to like finish the recipes yourselves, and then, you know, proceed with the story. That's the general gist of it.
Yeah. Can you kind of talk just about maybe A, where the idea came from, and B, you know, when I see a game like this where, you know, the central mechanic is cooking, my first question is, Do you like cooking yourself? Are you someone who actually enjoys cooking? And what are the kind of things, what are the kind of dishes that maybe you most enjoy?
Mm-hmm. For me, the idea came from, actually Sam, who's the artist on this game, Sam and I, we used to work at the same company. And we wanted to make this, we always wanted to make a game together, and we were actually making a completely different game, something called Balloon Man, which was this game about this depressed superhero whose only power is that he can make balloons and stuff like that. So, and like, you know, there's like the Iron Man equivalent in that world, so he doesn't really compare to that, right? So it was supposed to be like this Mega Man kind of boss rush game where you take on actual superheroes with like actual powers, but all you have are like balloons kind of thing, right? So we were working on that actually, and then one day I don't know, I was having a conversation with my family, and then suddenly I just had an idea for a simple scene, and I texted that to Sam immediately, and he and I both strongly felt that we should make this game instead. So we just put Balloon Man on hold, and that's how we came on to this. And I think the idea comes from a lot of things, but at the core, it's about the relationship between a mother and her son, specifically one where you know, the mother is from a completely different culture, but the son is growing up very rapidly assimilated, and the differences and the kind of bridge that, you know, comes in between them. So that's what we wanted to explore, and you know, we thought the idea of, like, one thing I found interesting is that with a lot of immigrant kids here, like, they might forget their language, or, you know, they might not watch movies from back home and stuff like that, but one thing that they cannot get away from is, like, the food. Like, they have grown up eating it, right? There's no choice. Mm-hmm. So I thought, like, that is a constant link we can use to tell the story. And as for the second question, do I like to cook? 100% yes. I definitely love to cook a lot. I am more than, like, I watch so many food videos on YouTube, like recipes and stuff like that. And I watch, like, I watch movies that have cooking scenes in them, even if the movie is bad, just because I just love that whole idea. So for me, the kind of dishes that I like very challenging dishes, dishes that take, like, you know, if anything says, oh, this has an 8-hour cook time, or a, you know, a 16-hour prep time, I'm like, I'm in for that. I'll dedicate a whole weekend for it. So yeah, I definitely love cooking.
That's interesting. You know, it's something I was thinking about when I was listening to another interview that you did, and just listening to you talk now is, you know, something that I always appreciate with food is that, like you're saying, in some forms, food is a way of expressing culture and identity and connecting with others. And in some ways, food is kind of like a living memory. It's this thing that you can pass on to others. And you said something that was really interesting in another interview, where you were talking about how, like, you know, in a family unit, like, you could be in an argument, or there could be something that there could be tensions between different family members. But the one thing that is always true is, like you're saying, is that everybody comes together at the dinner table and has to have food. And I'm curious, I don't know, it's just a really interesting sentiment. I'm curious, like, what was your relationship to food growing up?
I think, I was definitely very much a fan of my mother's food growing up, and I still continue to be. I think for me, thankfully, I had no qualms about, like, I came to Canada when I was 12. You know, first day in school and things like that, my mom packed me, you know, traditional food that I grew up eating. And, you know, I was self-conscious about eating it in front of others because of the strong smell and stuff like that. But most of that is in my head, but I learned to love that pretty quickly. A funny story is, like, all throughout university, it was me and a very close friend of mine, and I would always eat my lunch close to him, and I would open the lid just a little bit because, like, I was afraid of, you know, like, not blasting him with all these foreign flavors and smells. And I did that for 4 years, and then we met up recently, and we were talking about food, and he's like, and it was always the same lunch, and he said, what was that thing that you brought in your lunch bag? It always smelled delicious. I was like, wow, like, he had a completely different like, that insecurity was completely in my head, right? So I've grown, I think, to accept it and celebrate it a lot more. And I think nowadays, I try to cook more at home, cook the recipes that my mother likes to make. And, you know, it doesn't even come close to her skill, obviously, but that's fine. I just like, I like cooking these dishes. I think my biggest difference between me and my mother is, like, my mother cooks for others, you know, but I'm very selfish. I cook for myself. Like, my satisfaction, I think it ends as soon as I finish cooking. Like, I'm happy. It's like, oh, I made it, right? I couldn't, like, it doesn't really affect me if people eat it and say, oh, it's so great, or, you know, stuff like that. Like, for me, it's about self-expression only, which is in complete contrast to how my mother cooks. She would be crushed if I didn't like it, you know? So,
what is, you know, are you able to I guess, cook around your mother. You know, my dad is probably the big cook of our family, and it's so hard to kind of be in a kitchen with him because he's always like micromanaging everything that's happening, and will kind of stand over the stove and he's like, you know, there's not enough spice in there. What is that relationship like with your parents when it comes to cooking?
Yeah, that's so interesting. I think it's the same for me. The first couple of times I had my mom over in the kitchen, like I had her taste it, and then she tasted it and then immediately just went into the cupboards and started putting spices and powders, and like just like pushed me out of the cooking basically. And you know, she has every right to do that, I think. But what I found is like I can cook like dishes that she's not exposed to, like, you know, Italian cuisine and stuff like that kind of stuff she lets me own completely. And then recently, I've been trying to cook more healthier stuff for some of her health reasons, like keto or like, you know, low carb. Like that kind of stuff is very new to her, and she lets that happen. So that's how I found a way to like get into
to have some space in the kitchen. I like that.
Yeah.
You know, I think another interesting thing that I've been reading about Venba is that you've described it, it's a narrative game, but it's also like a puzzle game. And I think that's really interesting with cooking games, because you know, you look at games like Overcooked or how cooking is operates in, like, I don't know, Breath of the Wild or RPG games. It's very like not related to the actual act of cooking. And I think the puzzle aspect that you all are focusing in on is so true to like learning a recipe or delivering on a recipe. And I'm wondering if you could just talk a bit about that and what it's been like, you know, developing that kind of gameplay.
Yeah, that I think is one of the most challenging aspects for me personally. Because when I started this game, I knew I wanted to make a narrative cooking game, but the game is about the story, but you know, we need a gameplay vehicle for the story to sit on and, you know, deliver it, right? And when I looked at other cooking games at the time, you know, the prominent ones like Cooking Mama or something like that, it would focus on like, you know, cut the onion 3 times or, you know, stuff like that. But for me, sometimes I felt like that clashed with the story that I was trying to tell, because sometimes the story can be very emotional and serious, and like, it doesn't really lend itself to arcadey gameplay, right? And I also felt that, you know, is there something new we can do here? And so I had that's when the idea of like, okay, what if, you know, you have the recipe book, but it's damaged, and so you only have clues to have to put these recipes together. So you have to like use hints and puzzles and try to solve them and stuff like that. In retrospect, I think I didn't think that through entirely before I started the game like that, because turns out, like, you know, especially with the kind of recipes that we show, there's like 30 different steps or like, you know, 40 different ingredients, you know, so it is a huge challenge to figure out how to make a puzzle out of it. Initially, it was very true to form. Like I had like, you have 10 steps and number 2 is missing and number 4 is missing. Ingredient in this ingredient is mentioned in number 3, so you know, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And like it was a very cooking simulator kind of approach, but it didn't, technically you can call that a puzzle, but it didn't make for very fun gameplay. So it took me a while before, you know, I had to accept that, you know, we have to take some shortcuts. As a game, you know, you have to skew and stretch and abstract some of these mechanics. And instead, what I did was I would try to find, instead of trying to show recipes that I liked, I tried to find recipes that lended itself to a puzzle naturally, you know, and in case, you know, I'm showing off a very complicated puzzle, instead of showing off the whole thing, I would focus on just one part of it and then the most interesting part and see how to find how we can make a recipe out of that, or how do we make a puzzle out of that, you know. That took a lot of iteration. It took a lot of research, because I felt that, you know, people might expect, you know, a lot of authenticity and accuracy from whatever we show off in this game. So how do we balance that, but also balance, you know, game design and you know, actually making a fun game. So that took a lot of iterations to figure out.
One of the things I think Phil and I were talking about before is I was wondering how true to life these recipes are. Is this something where, you know, after playing, I'll actually get a good idea of like how to make a dish, or are these things that you had to pare down enough that you're like, this probably isn't one to one?
Yeah. So I think the rule that I had for myself is that I'm not going to show anything that's incorrect or inaccurate just for the sake of the game, but I won't show you the whole thing either. So the idea is that. And like, and I think in retrospect, I think that's actually a good decision, because just because we are making a game about cooking, and what I quickly realize is that for a lot of people, this might be the first time they're looking at any of these recipes. What I didn't want to be is the authority on these recipes, because we're not qualified for that, right? We are just game designers. We're not necessarily chefs or cooks or stuff like that. But what I hope to do is give you enough of an idea that your curiosity is high enough that it encourages you to learn about these recipes on your own. But you have like it's like you are watching someone do it, you know, like if you watch somebody make it, you know, it's not the same thing as a full detailed list of instructions, but it still gives you enough of a tutorial for you to try it on your own. But mainly we are focusing on you know, raising your curiosity rather than, you know, a straight up educational kind of game.
That's interesting. Out of curiosity, have you shown your mom any of the recipes in the game? Has she been giving you critiques in terms of what's happening?
I think, interestingly, I don't try to show the work I do to my parents a lot. Like, I try to keep that part away from them. I don't know why. But I think somebody else forwarded them like an article. And then they're like, wait, you're making this? I'm like, yeah. And then so I showed them the trailer and things like that. And, you know, for them, they don't fully understand games as a medium. Like, it's very new for them. They're shocked that people are interested in it. Like, oh, it's just, like, you know, they're just looking at it like, oh, it's just cooking, you know, people want to do this in a video game, you know. So that's how they're looking at it.
What is your, I guess, your relationship to video games, and yeah, how did you kind of get into playing games?
Yeah, my relationship actually, it started at a very young age. My parents, they brought home this console called the Terminator back in India, and that is a bootleg NES console, and it had a cartridge that said 999 games in one, and if you put it in, it's just 15 games, but it will just repeat until it's 999. And so, you know, it had like Super Mario Brothers and Duck Hunt and all those kind of games, right? That's when it started. And my parents actually, they took days of work to beat Mario Brothers on the NES. And then they were like, oh, this is too addictive and it's probably not good for us. And then they just disavowed video games entirely. But back in, when I was growing up in India, like, you know, it was a lot of piracy because we didn't have access to, we didn't even know that it was piracy. Like I played Pokemon, like the original, Blue or, you know, on the computer with an emulator, but I've never seen a Game Boy in real life, like until I couldn't finish getting all the Pokemon because you have to trade it to do that, right? And I didn't know how to beat the game until I came here, and then I saw that people were playing it in their handhelds and like, oh, this is how you're actually supposed to play it. It was a lot of weird, normally people who start gaming here, they go through like consoles, but for us, it was just this mishmash of like, it was Sonic the Hedgehog 3 and then GTA the next day, you know? So it was all PC. And I was very convinced that what I wanted to do was in video games from a very young age. And I think I had a hard time convincing my parents to see that as a viable career choice. So around grade 12, what I did was I took computer science, and what my argument was like, you know, I'll go into it And you know, I'll become a programmer, which is completely fine, but I'll use it to get into games. That was the plan I made back when I was in grade 12. And surprisingly, like, that's exactly what happened. Like, I got a job as a mobile game developer, and then that's where I met people like Sam, and then we started, you know, working on a game like Menboy.
Did you have to be, I guess, like, covert about your game playing just because your folks were like, actually, we're disavowing this because it is addictive?
When I was younger, for sure, like, you know, it was banned, and, you know, we would sneak in games and the PC, and definitely a lot of those things happened. I think as I was getting older, you know, they started to accept that, you know, he's not growing out of this, right? You know, they were much more accepting of that. But when I was younger, yeah, there was a lot of sneaking in games. There was a lot of trading games with, you know, classmates, and a lot of those things, yeah.
That's interesting. Do you currently, I think you had told me over email that recently you've been able to kind of go all in game development, where prior you were working like a full-time job and kind of making Venba and Balloon Man on the side. Maybe I'd love to hear a little bit about that journey and kind of where you are now.
Yeah, it's been pretty, I think that's what contributes to the surrealness right now, where I, you know, seeing Venba at the Tribeca Festival and stuff like that, because for us, like, we didn't see a path to full-time game development for a very long time. So I remember, I think we were making Balloon Man, and then we started making Menba on the side. And my plan was, you know, we'll get a vertical slice done, and then we'll show it off to publishers. You know, we'll pitch to a bunch of them, and then hopefully we'll get a publishing offer that'll enable us to, you know, do this full-time, right? And I think in the summer of 2020 is when I started pitching to a lot of different publishers. But, you know, some of them liked it, some of them, you know, didn't. And I understand it's a very risky game to back, right? I slowly just started, like, I realized, like, you know, this is a very hard game to sell, at least to publishers, you know? So we were, like, wondering how to pay for it. Do we do Kickstarter and all that kind of stuff? And that's when we did the Wholesome Games trailer, and the trailer that's out there for Venba, we did that for the Wholesome Games showcase. We put that together in a month, and it was around December that was premiered. And then the reaction to that trailer was completely unexpected. Like, we blew up quite a bit. You know, we got a lot of articles, we got a lot of press attention. Our wish lists were through the roof, and so, like, to me, then the publishers and, like, even platforms' interest started coming in quite a bit. To me, that felt like proof that, like, we proved it already that, oh, there is a target audience for this game, there is a market for this game, and now that there is, you know, people are much more comfortable, you know, backing it in whatever format. But after that, we were able to, through a combination of, because we're in Ontario, through a combination of Ontario grants and also some things that I can't say yet, we were able to secure enough funding to make the game full time. So we finally, I think this year is when I finally went, quit my job, and around April, I think. Started working full-time on Venba.
Can you kind of just talk about, you know, I guess, like, A, how that felt, but just that process? You know, Phil and I have been talking to a lot of folks, and I think he told you, you know, one of the themes that I think is emerging from this season is just talking to people about the reality of the dream, that it's like, it takes a lot of work. You're doing things on the side. Maybe they'll work out. Maybe they won't. How has that process felt to you?
Yeah, it was pretty rough, to be honest, because in my head, I was always like, this is just my day job was my temporary job, you know? In my head, I was always like, I'm always gonna, you know, this is just a temporary thing. I'm gonna be a full-time game developer at some point, you know? And I've been saying that for years, right? And with Venba, I was very confident that, you know, something will come off it, but we were facing those rejections quite a bit. I started to wonder, like, okay, maybe even Menba cannot be done full time, you know? So then I was like, okay, do I just hang up the whole game development thing? Do I, you know, pursue a different career? Like, I don't know, do I be a software engineer or something? And, you know, and to me, that was very crushing, because this whole time, the thing that I thought was a temporary job is turning out to be, is actually my actual career, you know what I mean? So I had to face that reality a little bit, but it was very crushing at that point. But that's around the time when the trailer blew up and it sort of saved us. But yeah, it is a very hard, it's really hard for people, like, you know, there's the whole, even people who can, like, there's the whole idea that you can quit your job and, you know, use your savings to get you through game development. But, like, some of that stuff is not possible for me. Like, I have to support my parents and, like, you know, there's a, I need to put money on the table at the end of every month. So there are those harsh realities, right? So, and it's also not super clear how to break into the industry. So there were a lot of misconceptions that I had. And if I didn't have, you know, good advice or good mentorship, actually from Eka, who went out of his way to really, you know, put us on the right path. If we didn't have that, I think, you know, we might have even said yes to a couple of bad deals and things like that, right? So in a way, the plan that I made is like, I'll make something like Venba, and then people will see that it's cool, and you know, it will lead to something, was the rough sketch. And in a way, that's exactly what happened. But there was a lot of ups and downs in that plan. Yeah.
That's just, I mean, it's good to hear. I think it's something that Ben and I empathize a lot with, because, you know, like, both him and I are working full-time jobs, and we do, like, all these creative projects on the side, from origin story to other creative writing type things. And yeah, I mean, I think it's just speaking for myself, it's like, you know, I work in marketing during the day, and it's not something I went to school for. It's not something I'm, like, that interested in. If I were to be, like, very objective about it, it's like, it's a good job and it pays well and all that, but it's like, it's not what I want to do. It's like, I want to do this stuff, like talking to you and, you know, make this podcast grow. And yeah, it's really just heartening to hear, like, that kind of journey of, like, you know, you just kind of stuck with it, and it eventually happened, and you found the project that was right.
Yeah, but I think it is a game of luck more than anything else, right? Like, you know, if I made it, yeah. Let's say, you know, just as likely is that, you know, there's a scenario where I didn't, you know? And I also think, like, I really hated the mindset that it put me in, because I, you know, when I first initially started making Menba, it was all about, for me, just the expression of that story. And that's the reason, you know, Sam came on board. You know, we just found that the idea was cool and we wanted to work on it. But as I was facing those, you know, the struggle to get funded, like, there was a little voice in my head that was trying to make Venba a bit more commercial. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. A bit more sellable. And I really hated that, like, you know, that thought even came into my mind, like, you know, because I am feeling the pressure, to get funded. Like, so I'm trying to see if I'm okay with selling out, you know? And I think that would have been more unfortunate than, and not making it completely. Yeah. Mm. So I am really grateful that this worked out this way.
That's interesting. I think, like, maybe a question to jump off of that is something you had talked about kind of near the top of the show with Balloon Man. You were talking about how, like, you kind of were working on Balloon Man and Sam, and then you sent him a text message for this, what would eventually be Venba. And it kind of sounds like you all switched gears. But I'd love to kind of maybe just zero in on that moment, because I imagine, like, that's, it could be a hard decision to be like, hey, we're just going to drop this project that we've been working on and start this new thing. Like, what was that like, or what were those conversations like?
It was hard. It was definitely hard, because there's a meme in, like, among game developers that the project you want to start, like, the idea that you get while you're working on your current project is always more pressing, you know, like, you always want to abandon, and then you always want to start. And, like, my Unity, the engine that I use, if I open it, there's like Untitled Project 1, 2, 3, 4, and then there's like Balloon Man, but like, you know, it comes across a path of that project. So when I started Balloon Man, I told Samuel, like, we are releasing this no matter what, you know. But the idea, I think, for Venba was just it was so exciting for us that it killed the excitement for Balloon Man. And it's very unfortunate, like, you know, and I still think, you know, Balloon Man is a great idea, and I might make it at some point, you know. But it was clear that, you know, Sam wanted to work on it. It was clear that I wanted to work on it. So yeah, it was a very hard decision. And like, we had this little club where we would show off our side projects and we'd all check in on each other kind of thing. Like, I dreaded the day where I had to go in and say, hey, by the way, I'm shelving Balloon Man. It was a big groan from everybody. And yeah, it wasn't something easy to do, for sure. But in retrospect, it ended up being the right decision, I think.
Can we maybe circle back a little bit to the game itself? You know, one of the things that we were kind of noticing is taking the parents' perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about why?
Yeah, I think it has to do with the fact that both Sam and I are like first generation immigrants, and we I wouldn't consider myself like fully assimilated. I am to the point where I can go back home and I can fit right in. Like, they can't tell that, you know, I grew up in Canada for most of my life or any of those things, right? So maybe it's those values still, which, but in general, there's a lot of media here, especially immigrant media, that focuses on like, oh, the kid is growing up and he has a life at home and he has a life at out of it, and they have to balance two different languages or things like that, or the dealing with parents' expectations and stuff like that, right? But to me, I felt the story of a parent who, you know, comes at a, you know, who uproots their life from back home at a time when it's not easy to start over, you know, and they're coming to a completely strange, completely foreign country, and, you know, they can't speak the language, and a lot of times their social circle is very confined to the family itself. You know, it's a huge risk that they take, and as a result of that, sometimes they might put expectations on their kids, right? And I felt like that perspective, like, what are their actual challenges? What are they actually thinking about? Not just from a perspective of how it affects the kid, but like, you know, what are their dreams and things like that, right? So I felt like that story wasn't told often enough or at all. And to me, like, that's what bothered me quite a bit. And especially for me, sometimes it's heartbreaking to see the parent not even being able to communicate with their child because of the language gap, right? I see it again and again here, like, you know, when the kid is born and they're at home, they speak Tamil or whatever language, you know, they're exposed to. But as soon as they go to school, they pick up English, and then they slowly start to forget Tamil, and then they start speaking English at home, which is fine if the parents know English, but if they don't, like, forever your communication with your parents is always through like a broken language, right? So to me, I found that very tragic, and that's sort of what I wanted to explore here.
Yeah, how are you, you know, in your own life thinking about, I guess, like, keeping your culture alive, keeping that connection to your parents alive? And then I don't know if you know, have kids or plan to have kids at some point, but then how do you also think about passing that on and keeping that, you know, those bonds strong?
I really wonder, like, right, I'm 28 right now, so at this point, like, I think I'm entering a point of life where it's our turn to now take care of our parents, yeah. You know, like that kind of thing. Like, that's a very, you know, maybe a Eastern kind of philosophy. But to me, it was, I don't know if it's because I grew up watching a lot of movies and music, listening to music from back home, but I felt I was always very rooted in our culture. But the main character of the game the kid from the game is a complete opposite of that. He's like some of my friends here who's completely assimilated, yeah. You know? For me, I had to think about, you know, it's also very easy to just say, oh, it's wrong to do that. And, you know, you should keep in touch with your culture and stuff. It's very easy to do that. But I also wanted to explore why, you know, kids who growing up here, why do they feel the pressure to, you know, assimilate? You know, what are they trying to get away from, you know? For me, it is a balance for sure. Like, I did have to strike a balance. It came easier to me. A lot of other people struggle with it. When I have kids, I don't know. I definitely want them to know a lot of this. You know, I want them to know about the movies and the music we watch and our histories and things like that. But part of me also feels it's wrong to force that on them, you know, when they're growing up in a society where, you know, there are other things that they're much more exposed to, you know. I don't know. I don't have an
yeah,
answer.
Yeah, no, it's fine. And I, you know, I'm also thinking about like when, because obviously this game is so rooted in the connective tissue here between these relationships can be the food. And I'm wondering when that maybe that aha moment was for you, or if there was one. I'm thinking, you know, recently. So I when I started dating my current girlfriend, she's vegan, and I like to cook a lot. And so for the first time, I was like, oh. There's so many of my recipes that I just like can't cook. And I think it was the first moment where I was like, oh, this is so central to a relationship. Like what you're eating with someone, what you're doing with someone, you know, the foods that you're making and the foods that you're consuming together is like pretty cornerstone to the relationship. And so I'm wondering, you know, was there a moment of aha where you're like, this is this connection between my parents, or was that always there?
So it makes sense for me because like I spoke about the language barrier that's there between the parent and the child, especially a mother and her child, right? So in a lot of Eastern cultures, and you know, maybe you know, across the world, traditionally, like a lot of the expectation is that the mother has to cook, and she has, you know, and a lot of them try to put a lot of their love into the food. And that's why, at least back home, especially in the older days, they would be crushed, you know, when you know, you don't come home for dinner, or like it would be, and I always wondered, like, why is that, right? Like, and that's because, you know, they were, like, this is, for better or for worse, you know, they're given that role to perform. And like, for them, that's the way they try to communicate a lot of things. And I thought, in a game like Venba, where the language barrier is broken, the only language she does have left to communicate with her son is like food, right? So she's doubling down on that a lot more. So to me, it was always part of the core idea. Like, how else would it work, right?
I love that. I mean, in terms of like the game, then is. Does most of it take place in the kitchen and you're doing the recipes, or are there like kind of sequences where we're seeing like the family and other places, like at the school lunch room or whatnot? Like, I guess what is kind of like the general flow of Venba?
Yeah. What happens is that at any given particular level, there comes a reason for these characters to cook a certain dish. And that reason is contextualized in the narrative. Sometimes it's in the home, and sometimes it's, you know, other things. And then they, hopefully it's natural the way, it's contextualized. And, you know, when they cook that certain dish, you know, it leads to other things. Right. So that's how we, have done it. So for example, one example I can tell you right now is I think the second level is where you know, the family's trying to celebrate something, and the son, who's like 6 years old at the time, he wants to order pizza, and he's saying no to any of the foods that, you know, she wants to cook instead. she's a teacher, and she is really good at, like, you know, getting kids to learn even when they don't want to, you know. And So she kind of uses that skill here to like say, oh, you know, there's this dish we make, you know, making it, it looks like launching a rocket ship. And that really gets his curiosity. And he's like, oh, it does. And so she sort of like almost manipulates him into like getting his curiosity up. Like she's trying to sell him his own culture, you know, like get him interested in that kind of stuff. So and then they're like, and then the family comes together and they cook that dish. And his mind is blown by it. And he's very excited about it. And like that makes Wenba really happy. Yeah. So so that is I think that would be one example.
That's really interesting. You know, Eka, when you talked to him, something that I thought was really resonant that he brought up was, you know, when he's working with his team, he always asks everybody that he's working with, like, what is a game or a piece of media where they first felt like they are represented? And I might be butchering exactly how he phrases it, but that's kind of like what he was getting at. I'm curious, especially with games, because I look at a game like Wenba and I don't think there's really anything like it. I'm curious, like for you, how has that played out? Like, has there been any other kinds of games where you felt represented, or when it was the first time you felt represented?
Yeah, for me, I think because I grew up so rooted in my culture, for me, that was never too much of an issue because we have an entire movie industry where I can feel represented, you know, from back home. And I primarily watch movies and music from there, so I have no problems with that. And I think, but I'll say this for me, I think traditionally, I feel represented in stories that are not necessarily, you know, about me or my race or ethnicity or culture, right? I think, and I hope, you know, for Wenba, like we're trying to touch upon, yeah, it's tricky to phrase this. My favorite film director, he said something, the more local you are, the more international you become. And I think that's true. And I think like, even though Wenba is a game that is about such a specific family and such a specific culture and time period and stuff like that, I think the hope is that, you know, if we say that very genuinely and stay true to that story, you know, anybody can, you know, feel relate to it or feel, you know, feel seen in it. And I think that's the, you know, that's the role of art, you know. It's like, unfortunately for me, like, I think human beings are very clumsy at communicating. And instead of, you know, telling somebody directly, we have to make a whole movie or a game and hope that, you know, when they play it, they can feel what I'm trying to feel, right? So, yeah.
No, I think that's so true, and that the specificity that the almost the quirks of the game sometimes are the things that you resonate with and that get you there to kind of really feel like you're invested in it. I feel that very deeply.
Well, I mean, I feel like, you know, I'd love to just talk a little bit about like what are you playing or watching or doing when you're not, you know, developing this game, which I'm sure takes up all of your time. But
yeah, I'm trying to be more healthy about it for sure. What am I playing? Recently, I played The Forgotten City, which I really enjoyed a lot. It was a great, great game. Another game that I recently beat was the Outer Wilds Echoes of the High DLC. Yeah. Beautiful, fantastic game. And a very depressing game too. Because
very depressing game.
No, it's depressing to me in another way, because when I play it, I'm like, I can never make a game like that. That's this good. I'm like, I'm just it's a really talented team behind it. But recently it's been hard for me to find time to play games or watch movies and stuff like that. Like I find that I watch The Office, just reruns of it more than anything else, you know. Just a short 20-minute break then.
That's interesting. I mean, so my background is in creative writing. I went to like grad school and taught writing for a number of years, and I find that whenever I read a book now, it's such like a much slower and like methodical process, because I'm just constantly like thinking like how they made it, and I I so relate to what you're saying, where you like read a book or something where you're like, damn, I'm never gonna be able to make something this good. I'm curious if that's like the same for you now with games, where when you play them, are you kind of like constantly thinking like, how is this made or whatnot?
Yeah, for sure. I think for games, that's always been the case, and even movies too. I think a lot about, like, you know, how did they even come up with that? Or like, if I laugh at a line, I'll, like, you know, how did they start with the joke first, or did they arrive at it organically? You know, those kind of thoughts for sure.
I think this just must be the curse of the kind of creative brain, where it's like, wait, how did they do that? And then it kind of ruins the moment of enjoying it because you're like, I have to deconstruct like how this was put together.
Yeah, especially for games, right? Like, and I think a friend of mine is like a technical artist. Watching him play the game is the worst experience, because he runs up to like walls, he looks at it very closely, he's like, oh, this texture does, like, dude, just get on with the game.
I think we're out of questions, except there was one thing I wanted to ping you, just because there's been so much, I've been seeing this kind of pop off, like conversations around things like Xbox Games Pass and how that might be impacting indie developers. And so I just kind of wanted to see, like, what's your perspective on things like this models like this that give people access to a lot of games, but, you know, are they good actually for creators?
Yeah, I'm a bit off put by the recent Netflix cancellations. And I think that's a little bit relevant to what we're seeing in games also, because, you know, this is about like services or platforms growing really fast and trying to show that they have the highest catalog and stuff like that. So when they're in that growing phase, they just fund games left and right, you know, and that's great, but they're not able to keep it up, and then they cut as ruthlessly as they grow, you know. So I am a bit we are you know, there is a lot of indie games and there's a lot of competitions, and you know, some companies do a really good job of it. And I think for a lot of indies, these kind of deals are the only way their games can get made. So I think it's very important also. But I am cautiously optimistic. Is where I'm at right now.
Yeah, it kind of seems like, you know, in our first season, we talked to Neil Jones, who made this game called Never Yield, and at the time, it felt like Game Pass was a little bit more of a hopeful vibe in the industry. That is what, I guess, a year, almost 2 years ago. And it definitely feels like the tables have turned a bit, and a lot of people, including myself, have become more like, I don't know. I don't know if this is gonna shake out how we want it to.
One thing is, one thing I find about the gaming industry, is that I think, unlike movies or music, and like, indie games are always, because maybe it's because people can just make it at their homes if they wanted to, you know. Like, if I were to make a movie, like, I need support, like, you know, I need a huge crew or whatever. Like, even if I make a short or a small movie, right, it's not easy to make one, but it's very easy to make a small game if you want to, right? So sometimes my dystopian fears are like, you know, there's only streaming services like Stadia, for example, that's running the entire gamut, and then only they get to decide what games get made, and you know. And but even if we reach that point, you know, people can just always disconnect and make their own game and put it on some server, you know. Like, because the tools of making games are always in our hands, I feel a bit more optimistic about the video game industry compared to like the movies or other industries.
Is there something we haven't asked you about this game or about this process or about, you know, something that's in your head that you want to say or you think is important to say?
No, I just want to reiterate that, you know, having you know, mentors like Eka was make or break for us. So you know, I think that's extremely important, and I hope, you know, I can be just as much help to others as Eka has been to me. And it was really heartening to see that kind of help throughout the industry, around the indie space. Yeah, so I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah, he even kind of extended some help and advice to us too. And yeah, it's really, Yeah, like you're saying, I mean, this seems like a really great person in that regard. And I think a lot, like you're saying, in the indie space in general, I just feel like there's so much of like a welcoming energy to like prop each other up or like provide the resources. And, you know, I think coming from like for myself, like coming from like an academic background where, you know, my professors were like really old and like kind of out of like, you know, they like how the industry works. I always was starved for like, how do I like make a career out of this thing that I'm this creative thing that I'm studying? And it's just really nice to hear, like, at least in the game space, there are people who are like forging that path in the major ways.
Thank you so much for taking the time and coming to talk to us.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we really appreciate it.
And that was our conversation with Abi of Visai Studios about his new game, Venba, a narrative cooking game. And yeah, this was such a fun conversation, I think especially after the heels of our conversation with Eka from Outer Loop Games. One thing that, you know, we've continued to harp on this season is that idea of the reality of the dream. And, you know, when we were setting up this interview with Abi, it's like I was telling him about that. And he's like, well, that rings so true to what my life is like right now. And it was so interesting to hear his story about like finally being able to go full time into game development. And I don't know, it was just like a really like hopeful and awesome thing to hear, and hear somebody be so excited about it.
Yeah, and it, I think on the one hand, like, it's super important to elevate and like talk to people who are like, it's been difficult and it continues to be difficult. I think it's important for people because it's like we're you know, one of the things we've talked about in the past is like, it's important to give people the real context that it's like a lot of people do continue to struggle or continue to have to try to balance the art stuff they're trying to do with the work life that they need to have in order to pay the bills. All that, all the kind of caveats aside, it's just nice to hear someone who is like kind of pulled it off and been able to go full time into, you know, doing the thing that they like want to do and love doing.
Yeah. And like even the stuff about, I want to say like early in the conversation, Abi talks about how, you know, Venba was recently featured in the Tribeca Festival as one of the featured games alongside Thirsty Suitors, which we talked about in our last episode, and how that was such a surprising thing. Like he never would have imagined that not only would they be featured, but that people would even be interested enough to talk about the game on like Twitter and stuff like that. And it just ringed so true to me thinking about some of our previous episodes, like with Neil Jones, for instance. Like, I think Abi does a good job of acknowledging that, yeah, he's finally reached this position of like being able to go full time, and it took a lot of hard work and dedication. But like at the end of the day, there's a lot of luck involved. And I think Neil also kind of echoed that, like, obviously, he's really proud of Never Yield, but it's like he just happened to be the one that's getting elevated. And there's so many other people who are doing interesting things who aren't. And like, that's just kind of the nature of things. So I liked how Abi kept it real in that regard.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that this conversation really speaks for itself. Again, it was super, super fun to talk to Abi about Venba. And, you know, I think it's a first, if I remember correctly, for Origin Story, where we're talking to people who the project isn't out yet. So if anything, it just kind of makes me more excited to check out the game. I don't have a firm release date on when it is, but I think it's supposed to come out later this year.
Yep.
And, you know, if you wanted to learn more about it, you can just go to venbagame.com, which is VENBA game.com, as well as their Twitter, which is @VenbaGame. Ben, where can we find more about you?
You can find more about me at sad_radio_lad. You can also shoot us an email. And again, I think as Phil mentioned at the top, we're looking for more people to talk to who you'd be interested hearing from. Hit us up at theoriginstorypod@gmail.com. You can also visit our website, which is beautiful, by the way, originstory.show, or tweet at us @originstory_.
And once again, we just want to thank Ryan Hopper, who does the awesome intro and outro music that you hear each episode of Origin Story, as well as Melody Hirsch for all the design work that she did for not only the website, but also our cover art and all of our, you know, social media assets. So we really appreciate that. And yeah, as always, we'd love to hear from y'all. So let us know what you think about the episode, and we will be back here again next time for our next conversation on Origin Story.